Brian Miller on WNYC. Now to our climate story of the week, which we do every Tuesday here on the Brian Miller Show. A study from researchers in the UK, published in the journal Nature Communications, has located regions of the world that carry the most risk of dangerously hot weather, of record-shattering heat. They've taken a novel approach, analyzing maximum daily temperatures around the world between 1959 and 2021, and they've zeroed in on one important yet simple explanation for why a particular region may be susceptible to high-impact heat waves, meaning not just hot, but a real high and negative impact on the people there. It's because, and I'm paraphrasing an explainer by New York Times climate reporter Raymond Zhang here, these regions have not been through an extreme heat wave before. So consider as an example the deadly 2021 heat wave that blanketed much of the Pacific Northwest, a part of the country used to relatively mild summers. Portland, Seattle, Vancouver, they all hit 100 degrees. British Columbia hit 121 degrees. The researchers behind this report found that that heat wave was so much more extreme than anything that had ever been registered in the region, it doesn't fit standard climate projection models. So let's talk to Raymond Zhang, New York Times climate reporter, about the study and some of the other things he's writing about, like drought in East Africa exacerbated by climate change and the optimistic prospect of respite in California thanks to less extreme spring temperatures. Raymond, thanks for joining our climate segment of the week. Welcome to WNYC.
Thanks, Brian. Good to be here.
So you explained in your article in the Times that this study from the UK found that regions covering 31%, so like a third, of Earth's land surface experienced heat so extraordinary that statistically it shouldn't have happened, but that there are still regions that had not experienced high-impact heat waves. So where are those some of those places, and which of them are of particular concern?
Sure. So it's an interesting study. It really finds that even though you've seen examples like that Pacific Northwest heat wave that looked so extraordinary, that sort of really tested our understanding of the climate, when these researchers looked around the world, they found that actually a lot of places had seen those kinds of really statistically implausible temperatures before. But actually, the places that hadn't yet experienced them seemed to be all around the world as well, and they don't fit a particular pattern. So you had countries in Europe, including Germany, the Netherlands. You had a part of China that also hadn't really seen the bounds of sort of its temperature records really stretched. But you also had a lot of developing countries, Afghanistan, Central America had a few countries, Papua New Guinea. So those are the places I think that it's reasonable to assume might be even less prepared, where the resources aren't there, the sort of infrastructure isn't in place to keep people safe during these heat waves.
Also, is it places not used to extreme heat, and so the impact on the people might be even larger? So we were talking about the Pacific Northwest. If it was going to hit 121 degrees in Miami, let's say, people would go, oh my God, that's terrible. But yeah, it's Miami, I guess. If the climate is getting hotter, that's where it's going to happen. They wouldn't have expected it in Canada, in British Columbia.
Right. That's exactly right. I think it's sort of an interesting way to think about the problem, because it really extends all the way from societies down to individuals. You know, if your own home hasn't flooded before, if you haven't yourself even sort of experienced what a 120 degree day might be like, then that's just not something in your own realm of preparation, what you think about in your day-to-day life. So when it happens, it catches you off guard. It sort of forces you to rethink what you do and how you spend your day. And that's true for societies as well. And that's why it's important to have an idea of, you know, where these places in the world are that might not have had that experience and that memory of really traumatic heat.
You know how some people call global warming global weirding? Is this an example of that the effects of climate change as the Earth warms are more scattershot than scientists would have expected them to be, such as extreme heat in a place like the Pacific Northwest or in Germany, another example you cited, which is relatively north?
I think basically what the study and sort of generally what scientists now understand about the climate is, you know, the weather has always varied a huge amount. Just with even before climate change, there were always extremes. There was, you know, the right combination of the air moving in a certain way and pressure, and it just creates these sort of extreme temperatures. And obviously, so you can sort of say that's always happened and places have always experienced it. What climate change does is it turns up the dial a little bit. You have more heat in the atmosphere. Everything sort of shifts up. Those really hot extremes become more likely. But it just sort of, this study really hammers home that all those extremes are still possible. And extreme sort of way off the charts heat waves are just still a matter of getting really unlucky with the air and the pressure and circulation of it. So I think it's basically the message is that these extremes can always happen and they can happen anywhere.
Yeah. And I'm thinking of it in contrast to another story you've been reporting on that I mentioned in the intro, which is East Africa's drought, which is in its third year. But the average American might think, well, yeah, that's an impact of climate change that I might have expected. Desertification in an area that's already warm and has a certain amount of desert. Again, not in some place like Portland or Seattle. But you wrote about a study which found that climate change made that East Africa drought 100 times as likely. So can you talk about the effect of such a long dry spell in so vulnerable a region and what that study found?
Sure. So what's been happening in the southern part of the Horn of Africa, so parts of Ethiopia, Kenya, and Somalia, is they've had an unprecedentedly long string of weak rainy seasons. That part of the world has two rainy seasons per year. And so basically for five consecutive rainy seasons now, they've had below average rains. And as you said, it's a vulnerable part of the world already. A lot of people depend on rain-fed agriculture, they're pastoralists, they have herds of cows, they sort of depend on the land quite a bit. And when the rain doesn't come, the effects on the human populations is enormous. And while it's, of course, a place with that vulnerability there, and you might expect its climate being close to the equator to be already quite hot, in fact, climate models had suggested and still do suggest that that part of the world might actually experience more rain as the world warms. It's just a sort of heat function of where it is along the Indian Ocean. So it wasn't necessarily obvious that you would have more droughts, but what this group of scientists found in their analysis released last week was that actually weak rains might not have been influenced by climate change, but the temperatures that really contributed to the soil and the land being so parched during these droughts, mm-hmm. those temperatures have been made more likely by climate change. So you do see, when you put that together, weak rain and high temperatures exacerbated by climate change, that's what sort of made this recent scenario much, much more likely for East Africa.
And listeners, if anyone has any comments or questions for Raymond Zhang, New York Times climate reporter, on the regions most at risk of extreme weather, as identified by researchers from the UK and published in the journal Nature Communications last week, we can take your calls. Anyone from any of the areas we've been talking about so far, or in any of the areas we've been talking about so far, or just climate concerned people generally with a comment or a question or a policy proposal, anything, 212-433-WNYC. 212-433-9692. Staying on that question of drought, worse in East Africa than was being projected. California, the opposite. So used to drought in recent years, but now showing signs of respite. How come in California's case?
It's been an extraordinary year for California water-wise. They had a really, really strong string of storms, really back-to-back in the early part of this year. And now the big question is how quickly all the snow that's piled up in the Sierra Nevada will melt. And while, you know, it's still very early to say the whole season for melting in California is going to be sort of between, it's already started, but it'll go through July maybe. But at least in terms of the big picture, it doesn't look like California and Nevada are going to be warmer than normal. So at least, you know, you can say that the snow melting might not be as quick or as sudden as you might fear. And it's when the temperature really climbs and really spikes in that region that the snow melts quickly and you can get flooding. Doesn't mean California is entirely out of the woods. The melting's already started. Individual sort of weeks might be hotter than usual. And you could still see a lot of problems with reservoirs and levees in California. But at least from a really high level, the forecast is looking okay.
And getting back to this study from the UK on the areas of the world that are likely to experience the biggest impact from extreme heat, and we should say those researchers are from the University of Bristol, the University of Edinburgh, Oxford, and the University of Exeter. They didn't just look at climate and weather data, I see. They also used economic and population data to determine risk, which is why Afghanistan, in particular, such a different place from, say, the Pacific Northwest, which we've been talking about in relation to this study, why Afghanistan is such a particular concern. And though it might be fairly obvious, we should ask, how might extreme weather affect Afghanistan?
I think you already have seen, you know, even in recent years, not necessarily in Afghanistan in particular, but other regions where there is political conflict and political instability, all of this extra layer of climate-related hazards can really exacerbate things. It can really intensify conflicts between, landowners for resources, between different nations for water and other resources. So I think generally the concern in a lot of parts of the world is that you do have an extra layer of vulnerability and hazard on top of what is already a pretty can be pretty fraught situations. And I think that goes for the Horn of Africa as well.
So speaking of places where we might not at first associate it with climate change or climate change as a bad thing, here is Lawrence calling in from Anchorage, Alaska. Lawrence, you're on WNYC. Thanks so much for calling. Hello from New York.
Hello. Thank you. Thank you for taking my call. I appreciate that. Yeah, I've lived in Anchorage on and off since the early 80s, and I've had a lot of experience here with some weather. My friend was an amateur weather meteorologist here. So a few summers ago, we had unprecedented heat here. We had temperatures that reached 100 degrees in Anchorage, if you can believe that. Anchorage is not the interior of Alaska where it could get up that high. We're sort of on the Cook Inlet, which is coastal, a little more coastal influence. Unprecedented heat and followed by days and days of 80 plus degree weather. Anchorage, if it got up to 75, that was a hot day. Okay, so then that was followed recently by a drought which occurred last spring into the summer, where we had a drought for 2 months. We had zero rain, which is unprecedented. We had wildfires here in Anchorage, which is, you know, scary because it's a city of 300,000 people. And we do have a lot of places which are forested nearby. And then that followed immediately after the 4th of July, we had a summer that was unprecedentedly rainy. It rained every day last summer, just about every day. We had unprecedented rains. And then that was followed by this winter, which was a historic winter for snow and cold. This is one of the coldest Aprils we've ever had. We still have several feet of snow on the ground here in Anchorage, which is unprecedented. Usually by now, most of the snow is gone.
So Lawrence, what does this all say to you if, you know, climate change is supposed to be warming and it may not be a straight line, but it's up, 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 more or less. But one of the weird effects that you're describing is so much cold this winter.
Well, what it is a land of extremes. So I think climate change is all about going from extremes and not necessarily a straight line. It could be cold and warm and then lots of rain and no, like, look at California. They had a drought and followed by historic rains. So it's just all about extremes, and that's where we seem to be experiencing here on the West Coast particularly. And in the Arctic, you know, things are happening here that are, you know, villages are sinking. There's a lot of tundra that the permafrost is melting. We have a lot of extreme things going on here. So I think, you know, that's what climate change is all about. And it's not necessarily just warming. It's, mm-hmm. I think, extreme weather.
Thanks for the report from Anchorage, Lawrence. And I guess you're an early bird because it's only about to turn 7 o'clock in the morning there. So thanks.
Yes.
For being up and articulate so early and chiming in. Thank you. Raymond, what'd you think about that caller from Alaska?
Yeah, I mean, Alaska has always been a land of weather extremes, but certainly he's right that it's not just about temperature. It's about temperature cascading into precipitation and lots of other forms as well. So the extremes are the things that scientists are worried about.
I think it's a lesson for people who don't follow climate change very closely and think, well, it's going to be better in really cold places like Alaska. It's going to be worse in really hot places like in the South. But he was describing some of the effects on communities, and it's not that simple, right?
Yeah. I mean, even if you think maybe Alaska might be better off if it were warmer on average, the transition process getting to that point still means lots of disruption to infrastructure, to people, to communities in the meantime. Sort of that process of going from a cold state to even a moderate state. As he described, lots of melting of permafrost, infrastructure built on permafrost, forest fires in the meantime. There's just not, it's happening at more quickly than people, than societies can adapt in many cases.
Let's stay in the Pacific Northwest, since that's been such a locus of this conversation so far and of that study you're reporting on. Here's Zach in Portland, Oregon. Zach, you're on WNYC. Thank you for calling in.
Thanks for having me. First time, long time. It was really scary here in Portland, I got to say, because it was at the same time as like the forest fire. So, and it was 118 degrees. We had to rent a portable AC unit. Our cat was like freaking out. We had to get a hotel room even one night.
Wow. First time you had to buy an AC in Portland?
Yeah, totally. It never gets that hot. But the wildfire also, that was really scary. Because like we couldn't even go outside. Like we didn't know where to go. We couldn't go outside of our house because it was like smoky, and then we had to be inside. But like it was so hot, we were like trapped in there. It was a really scary experience.
Wait, Zach. I think your cat just made its radio debut.
That's right. Nina's first time on the air, just like me.
Hello, Nina. I'm sure you're very cute. Zach, thank you very much for checking in. I really appreciate it. And you hear the distress in his voice, Raymond, as you know, in addition to the facts of what was going on. I guess he was largely describing the summer before last in Portland. And so here we are on May 2nd, and they may be anticipating this summer with dread. Is it going to be like last year? Is it going to be like 2 years ago? So from a policy standpoint, what type of actions should or are studies like the one you report on and stories like the ones we've been hearing from our callers prompt?
It's a little bit tricky. I mean, with this study, they really simplified a little bit. There's so many things that cause societies to be vulnerable to the heat. Not it just sort of as the caller mentioned, whether people have ACs, sort of whether their homes are insulated or whether they can the homes can cool themselves a little bit better. There's so many things that go into it, but this study focuses on just whether they've had that experience. And so it doesn't necessarily mean we should be pumping trillions of dollars into Germany to help them adapt. But I think, you know, it is an issue that a lot of parts of the world are thinking about now. What is the future if it's going to be much hotter? The UK itself last year had a pretty remarkable heat wave. And there is some talk now about how new buildings can be made sort of that the new buildings trap less heat. AC adoption is something that's on the table, although of course air conditioners use a lot of electricity. So it's not easy. It's not quick. Even societies that have experienced that kind of extreme heat can't necessarily turn themselves around immediately before the next summer. So it's a long-term process of adaptation. And I think it's interesting to see what's happened even in the Pacific Northwest in just 2 years.
And since this is a global take, let me get one more caller in here who's going to talk about a very different part of the world that we've mostly been discussing, Southern Africa. Gadi in Orange County, you're on WNYC. Hi, Gadi.
Hi, how are you? Thank you for having me on.
Certainly.
First time caller, but frequent listener.
Good.
I wanted to bring attention to the fact that Malawi in Southern Africa and Mozambique suffered an extreme in terms of Cyclone Freddy, which brought in an excessive amount of rain, caused excessive flooding, mainly in southern Malawi and upper parts of Mozambique. But then this last week, the northern part of Malawi had excessive rain, continuous rain for almost 2 weeks, with excessive flooding of the lake, as well as all parts of even the higher lands, and people have just been displaced. And especially at this time of the year, being that it's normally harvest, they have had the gardens flooded, so they will not be able to harvest. So besides flooding, excessive rain, you also will end up with difficulties in terms of food. The cold weather last year was reported by my relatives to be extremely cold. So you're having these extremes of very heavy rain at a time when it should have been dissipating, and then very cold weather in our cold season.
Gadi, thank you for checking in and giving people that report. We really appreciate it. So Raymond Zhang from the New York Times, a climate reporter for the Times, as we wrap up, we've heard stories about extremes of both heat and cold, of both drought and rainfall, from Anchorage to Malawi. Here we are in the global warming, the global weirding era.
Exactly. And I guess the thing I would add maybe to wrap up for this year, it's the big change is that we're moving in the Pacific from La Nina to El Nino. And El Nino, both of these phenomena cause different effects in different parts of the world, but generally El Nino is associated with higher global temperatures on average. So we've been talking about global warming, but we've been in La Nina for the last 3 years, which might have actually masked some of the effects of that global warming. As we move into El Nino, the full picture might become a little clearer in terms of what higher temperatures are doing around the world.
And of course, this is all in a long-term context. I think that's assumed and understood by a lot of the listeners. Extremes can happen at any time, anywhere, as an anomaly. It's when it's a pattern and it's getting more and more and going in certain directions as the Earth gets warmer and warmer every year, as we've had most of the record warm temperatures on Earth just in the last 10 years. And so that, of course, is the context of our climate story of the week and of the stories we heard today. So we thank Raymond Zhang, New York Times climate reporter. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Brian.